Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey everyone, this is BT, and welcome to Inside the Episode. Today, David and I are going inside episode 92. This was part three of his 12 Rules for Life, an Antidote to Chaos series. So I've got David here with me. David, how you doing?
I'm doing great, T.
All right. So in the episode, a large portion of it revolved around the book of Genesis and understanding right and wrong, good and evil, and so on. And it, as you mentioned in the podcast, this definitely provides for a lively discussion. How do we simplify this story and what lessons we can take from it? Because obviously it's a book of lessons.
Well, yeah, and that's a hell of a question. Here's the thing, Brandon. I don't know that we can simplify it. I really don't know that we can. I've been studying this on my own and listening to other people from various different viewpoints discuss religion, not just the Christian religion, but all different religions, and to make the arguments or whatever. So it's a funny thing. It's a funny question to ask, because I think that it requires for you to say, well, how do I want to say this? Where's your starting point from the explanation to begin with? Are we taking the book of Genesis, and let's just say Genesis or the Bible, whatever, and are we saying that it's an actual real document, like this really happened, or are we taking it from a metaphorical psychological perspective that this is how people came to describe the evolution of human beings? What perspective are we actually coming from on this? Because I think it's much more easily described if we come from a metaphorical place, because, like I said in the program, there are so many contradictions in this work, in this piece of literature. So, if you're actually coming from the perspective of that there is a God and that God did all of these things, it opens up a whole new basket of questions. Right.
Sure.
So, and again, I have no religious bent on this either way. I think that there's truth in everything that we look at. We just have to be able to find it and discern what it is. And I think that this is a fascinating thing, because part of the truth is that a lot of our moral and ethical values all over the world came from religion. They're based in religious philosophy. So I think that if we're going to chunk it down into its most simplistic idea, I have always found, like, if a person asks themselves the question, does what I'm thinking, doing, or being in life, does it add to my life, and does it add to the life of other people? Because good and bad is like, that's where you open the door for the argument, because let's face it, terrorists thought they were doing something good in their belief and their perception of the world, right? The people that are not think they're doing something good and getting rid of the terrorists of the world. So just use that as an example.
Sure.
Hitler thought he was doing something good in his warped mind, right? So, but the rest of the world doesn't really see it that way. But now you have an argument, right? Because there's two sides that are being presented. So I thought, well, how do you reconcile that? Like, how the hell do you even begin to reconcile this? Who's right? Who's wrong? Because they're really heavy questions that philosophically, sure, psychologically, spiritually, we've been trying to answer for eons. And I thought, well, what if we deduce it to this idea that the purpose of life is to add to life? That seems to be very true. The purpose of life seems to add to life. And it flows in a way where everything a person does either adds to life or it takes away from life. But even interestingly enough, in the taking away of life, that adds to life. So I think if we come from the perspective of, is this going to add to my life, and is it going to add to someone else's? I think that that gives us the moral compass when we bring in both of those questions. Because we could do things that add to our life, don't necessarily add somebody else's. It actually takes away from somebody else's.
Very true.
So if we're going to keep the bearing of a moral, ethical compass there, we have to say, does it add to my life, and does it add to other people's lives? If it does, then we're probably on a good track of keeping it simple, understandable, and in a place where we can make a decent conscious choice about whatever we're evaluating.
Great. Also in the episode, you talked about, you talked about this a couple different episodes now on this very topic about suffering. You know, you mentioned that suffering is sort of a human condition. It's a very far cry from what we observe in the animal kingdom. As you just spoke about a moment ago, humans are capable of doing great injustices and atrocities towards its own kind. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about why these bad things happen and why evil exists. Now, we're not asking you to solve it. Just talk a little bit more, because I know there's people out there who say, well, you know, what's happening to children across the world, or what's happening in our own country, in our own streets, these are horrible atrocities. We are doing this to ourselves. Why do bad things happen, and why does this evil exist in the world?
So, and again, this is another great question. Peterson points, there's one part in the book where he says life is suffering, and he's not the first person to say it. And every time I hear it, I want to say, like, my internal compass wants to say, no, it's not. But that's not true, because if for me to say that, I would have had to experience life not suffering, and that has not been true for me or anybody else that I know. We've all suffered through things before. So then it's like, well, does all of life have to be suffering? Now, I think that I had somebody, and I've had several people actually in seminars ask me, why do we have to experience pain in life? And I've always kind of clarified it, like, do you mean like acute pain, or do you mean like suffering? And generally they're talking about acute pain, but on occasion they're talking about suffering. So we know biologically that pain is a reactive way to preserve life and keep us moving forward. Like if we step on something and sharp and it goes through our foot, or we're burning our hand, we have to be able to feel so we can stop doing a behavior that is actually technically hurting us. Suffering is when we continue to stay in the process of something that's painful, and that can be psychological or spiritual or emotional or habitual, in a relationship. Like, there's all different ways that we can go down the road there. But your question is, like, why? And I've asked that question for a long time, like, why? The best answer that I have been able to really kind of come up with, and I've heard a lot of different viewpoints on this, is that it's the level of consciousness that we currently exist at. But part of that consciousness is that if you look at the opposites of suffering, like, what would you think, T, is an opposite of suffering?
I would think you're thriving, you're living, you're joyous, and just living your best life. That's what I would think.
Right. So here's the thing. Could you really know those things in their totality if you've not experienced suffering?
No, I don't believe so. I think you have to have one. One can't exist without the other.
Right. And it's also indicative of the idea that we're human beings with the potential to choose, the ability to choose, right? So it's always choosing between one way and another. So it then you break it down into, well, why do we have the ability to choose? Because the ability to choose is our ability to create our own life, whether it's suffering or whether it's joyous and abundant and beautiful, right, and whatever. So there's something about the human experience that has to completely encompass everything in order for us to know, right? So in the in the chapter or in the verse in Genesis, he said, ye are like gods. You know now like gods the difference between good and evil. So you now have the ability to choose between those two things in your life. Otherwise, you're just kind of, you know, like an animal doesn't know that it's going to die, right? It's an interesting concept. Sure. We learn very early on that we're going to die, and we try to wrap our minds around that our whole life, or in many cases, we try to avoid it. But an animal doesn't know that it's going to die. But what's also interesting is if you watch animals generally in the wild, they don't suffer either. It's like if they know that they're mortally wounded, they just die. They don't, you know, they don't go on for long periods of time trying to extend something that they know is completely unproductive, and yet they don't have the conscious ability to evaluate that either. So because human beings have that ability to evaluate that, to experience the depths of suffering in its darkest, most horrific places, and the amazing parts of, you know, excitement and enthusiasm and joy, we get to experience all of that in order to do something specific with it in life. And I think that that's unique to the individual and the individual's purpose. So I think it's tied to that somehow.
Yeah, it's a higher evolved consciousness that allows us to deal with that suffering. We wouldn't be able to feel the suffering if we weren't able to somehow handle it. I think that's what makes us humans, like you said, the human condition.
Right.
I think that's great. So in the episode, you talked about how evil perpetuates itself through various avenues, but the difference is in the intention. You said something that I really latched onto, and you said, we know what hurts us, so we use that to hurt others. When we become aware that others have the ability to hurt us, that usually probably happens when we're very young. And that led us to a common topic here on the Successful Mind podcast, which is shame and guilt. So in the book of Genesis and what Peterson wrote about, he talks about that nakedness. We learn shame and guilt very early on. And we've mentioned it on this podcast many, many, many times. Your events, it always comes up. So I know I've asked you this question before, and people out there are saying, I've heard this before, but maybe we'll get something new out of it. What can we do right now to become aware of those concepts of shame and guilt in our own lives? And how do we work towards dropping them?
Yeah.
That's a big question. I'm sorry. I just threw it at you, but
it's a mother.
It's such a huge feeling for a lot of our people out there. Shame and guilt always comes up at every one of your events. And you tell them, you know, if you can drop that, then your whole life changes. Everything shifts. You're totally on a different path. I know you can't do that in a short little episode like this, but what's maybe one thing that they could do right now to just at least be aware of it and start to drop it?
So I think we also have to ask the question of, like, why is it so damn powerful? Because that's always amazed me. And my conclusion on that is because it gives other people leverage over our lives. That seems to be the most relevant, prevailing idea behind it. It gives another person power over your life. But here's the thing. Both people have to believe that, right? So if I'm not ashamed of my body, you can't shame me because I won't take in the shame. I don't have any shame. However, if you have, now this is where it gets interesting though, because very often, depending on what we do for a living, other people can make choices to take that away from us in some way. Now we're seeing a lot of this going on right now. People that have or have not done things in their past, but they're accused of it, and other people believe it, and then their careers are destroyed, their history is destroyed, everything that they've done is basically destroyed. That happens because of shame. So then a person says, you're a bad person, you've done a bad thing, we have the power to take everything away from you. Right. And we're doing it in an interesting way where we're actually going outside of our moral and ethical guideposts for ourselves here in the United States, in the free world, where we say that a person is innocent until proven guilty. We're actually going back to the idea that the person's guilty based on the accusation of someone else without any proof. Now, I'm not arguing for somebody who's victimized and it actually happened, but we actually have seen where a person gets accused and it hasn't been proved and they've lost everything over it. So my point of this is not to debate the ethical argument there, but really to look at the idea that as long as other people have power over our individual lives, it's very difficult to completely drop shame, because we almost have to live in a way where we have the approval of others. Now, it's also if it's done in a healthy balance, it's a good thing, because it can keep society relatively well balanced on an ethical and moral perspective and moving in a good direction. That's why you want to have good people around you in life, because they could tell you if you're fucking up. Right. You know, they could tell you if you're not doing it, and not in a shaming way, but in a way, but like, hey, you're better than this. You need to pull it together and do something about this, whatever it is. But in order for a person to drop it from a destructive way in their life, they have to take on their own agency in life. They have to be able to be as self-sufficient as possible, where they're not putting themselves in so many people are going through life, they're like codependent with life, like with everybody in life, and they don't have the ability to go out and do something on their own, independent of another person's opinion of them. So we see that very often when people are working for someone else, or you're in an industry where other people have control. That's where I think that it causes a problem. But for the most case, I think that a person should, in order to do this, they should, number one, they should drop the shame and guilt, forgive themselves for whatever they've done in the past or whatever has happened in the past, because we can't change it. Number two, decide how you want to live your life and then take a stand for it and don't cover it up. So we know that there's people that live lives that aren't completely traditionally morally acceptable. And that would be based on, say, Protestant moral values type thing. But they have to take a stand for the way that they want to live. I mean, hey, look, homosexuals have been dealing with this for eons, right? So it's only now that they're starting to be able to live freely in the world to some degree, because they're taking a stand for the way that they want to live their life. And it's not hurting anybody else because they want to live their life that way. So even though there's people that have a difficult time accepting that, the reason that they're able to kind of transform and move past that shame in their life is because they're willing to say, hey, this is who I am. I really don't give a shit what you think. And then this is the way I'm going to live my life, and I'm not going to keep it locked in a closet or some kind of dark secret where I'm afraid for everybody to know, because you're going to do something about it. So that's how I think that people have to deal with it. Be proud of who you are and the way that you want to live. Make sure you've given it conscious thought. You have to weigh out the consequences of what it is that you're doing. You know, and then take a stand for that, and don't let somebody else shame you. I mean, nobody can do anything that you don't allow happen yourself. So you have to take responsibility for that too.
Yeah, that is so good. Like, you know, just you know, if you've got body shame issues, that perpetuates from you. You're the one that's carrying that story around. If you give that up and say, you know, this is my body, this is who I am, then people can't shame you because you've dropped the shame. So it's just like Teflon. It just slides right off.
It is. And actually, it exposes their ignorance to a great degree.
100%. If we all walked around without any shame or guilt, it would be a completely different world. And you would just go on living your life rather than trying to live your life for other people. You'd be living it for yourself.
Correct.
All right. I'm going to leave it at that. I just want to close with one other thing. You know, inside the episode, you talked about, you know, the purpose of life is to add to life. I can't think of anything better than that particular statement. So I don't know. I just want to end with that. The purpose of life is to add to life. So how Beautiful. Are you adding to life right now? I mean, it's so powerful. We know what you're doing to add to life. I know what I'm doing to add to life. I think we send our listeners off with, go out there today, add more to life. Really, if we can all live that way, it's going to be a pretty damn good ride. So that's all I've got.
Right on, man.
So yeah, thanks so much for sticking around, David, and we'll catch you on the next time.
Sounds great.
Later.
Thanks for listening.
listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.